What's going on, everyone? Welcome to Design Daily. My name is Austin Beck. I'm an architectural designer, and I'm your host. Design Daily is a podcast where I sit down and have candid conversations with creators and designers across design disciplines. That includes architects, product designers, developers, UX, UI, artists, painters, musicians, anyone doing something creative in a design discipline. And these are all people who are doing great things that are inspiring to me and I feel that have a message or a story that needs to be shared. This week we have an awesome guest on the show. I know the past two episodes that I put out were actually me being on my good friend Cody Deal's podcast, Real Deal Radio. And I think those were two good episodes to have all of you out there listening, get to know me, get to know why I'm creating content, why I'm doing this podcast and all that. But now we're really getting into the episodes that I've been wanting to do and I'm excited about, where I'm sitting down having conversations with these creators and designers doing great things. And like I said, this week we have an awesome guest to get this series going. We have Matthew Cox on the podcast. He's a great friend of mine, and he's an industrial designer, a carpenter, a furniture maker, and a recent homeowner with his wife, Katie. So during this episode, we talk about how we met in college, about industrial design, what is industrial design, and its connection to architecture, as well as we talk about his childhood growing up in different countries around the world, as well as his experience at Danish Furniture School. Before we get into the episode, I just have a short disclaimer to say that this was the very first episode of Design Daily recorded. And being that it was the very first episode, there was still a lot of things to work out with the audio. So the audio is not the greatest in this episode, and I did my best to clean it up in post, but I still think it was a great conversation, and there's a lot to gain and a lot of knowledge to learn from what Matt says. So let's get into it with Matthew Cox.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show. Glad you're here, man.
Yeah, good to be here.
Yeah, so I wanted to have you on first because, one, really good friend of mine, and two, I just thought that you would be like the perfect person to have as the first episode of this podcast. Like, you're just involved in a lot of things design wise. And like, that's what this podcast is going to be about. Like, it's about practicing design daily, doing some design task, whatever it is. You know, it could be like architecture, it could be ID, it could be carpentry, or it could be like, you know, cooking or just like sketching or like anything design where you're creating something is that's really what just this podcast is about. And it's about doing that every day to build those habits. So yeah, I actually wanted to start with like background between us, how we met. Cause for me, and I've said it before, like you're the first friend that I made in college, which is pretty cool.
Same here.
Yeah. Special. Yeah, we met, we attended what's called Summer Academy at Virginia Tech, and it was a program designed for incoming freshmen to go the summer beforehand and to get acclimated to campus and professors and whatnot. And so I had gone to get into the architecture program, but you had gone because you needed a place to live, right?
That's right. Yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah. I originally went because my parents were moving out of the United States to Africa at the time. And they kind of just kicked me out at that point. They're like, hey, we saw this program. I was actually already accepted into the program. So they saw the Summer Academy program and they thought, hey, free housing, not free, but housing. And it was beneficial. And honestly, I think it was one of the most beneficial things because I met a lot of great people and kind of had, like you said, an introduction to design and kind of got settled in a little bit.
Yeah, Matt lived across the hall, like just like the room across the hall from me. We both had very strange roommates that summer, each in their own unique way. But yeah, and then that led us to just hanging out a lot. We were in the same studio freshman year. And then, you know, later that led us into meeting more friends and then moving in together and then living in a house the rest of the 4 years together. You studied industrial design, and, you know, just for those who may not know what industrial design is, like, you know, what is it? What does that entail? Like, what is an industrial designer?
Yeah. So, yeah, I was accepted into the program under industrial design, and at Virginia Tech, particularly, that is under the School of Architecture. A lot of schools, it's associated with engineering, but in simple terms, I like to think of it as the interaction between man and machine, which is kind of a bizarre definition for it, but that's the way I try to think of it. It's designing how people interact with products, and the product can be anything, fill in the blank. Usually more small scale items, more handheld items, but an industrial designer might not feel completely out of place in something larger scale, or even hypothetical larger scale, meaning like architecture or landscape design, and hypothetical meaning more user interface and digital design. So the product can be sort of vague, which is part of the reason why I was drawn to the field, because it has a lot of potential to just go anywhere. And my biggest goal, especially now after being through, educated in industrial design, is just to bring design to everything that I do, every product that I make, every service that I give. I try to be intentional with it. And that's what drew me initially to it, whether I realized it or not. So.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's so broad. Which is, like you said, that's one of the reasons why I like ID, and a lot of people are attracted to it. And I know you were trying to convince me in the process and for a few years to switch to ID from architecture.
Yep.
I was very close. Second year, mid-year, just super hard with the professor that I was so close to dropping out of architecture and switching to ID.
We almost gotcha.
It was so close. But it was like, my mom was literally like, she was like, give it a few more weeks. Like, okay. Stick it out a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a good choice. But like at Tech, the ID is under architecture. And I think one that's personally for me, like, I think that's a better place to have the program rather than engineering. I understand why it could be, but a lot of industrial design architects were doing beforehand. Like it sort of had come out of architects, and like architects being like the industrial designer, the interior designer, the engineer, like the architects used to sort of do everything. And now these fields have grown out of it. And like, as more products and more things have developed over time with technology, like there's the need for those fields. Architects can't do it, but there's such a strong connection between architecture and industrial design. Even in the recent history, like, you know, even still to today, but in terms of industrial designers, like sort of being born out of architecture.
Absolutely. I mean, I was actually talking to a coworker of mine about, he mentioned something about how architecture seemed boring to him. And I was talking to him about why I really like it, you know, and he was saying, did you go to architecture school? I'm like, not really. I was under the School of Architecture, but it's intriguing to me exactly for the reasons why you just said. It's architecture is kind of the birthplace of industrial design in a sense, because I wouldn't say by practice, but I would say by entrepreneurs and the people who actually defined what it meant to be an industrial designer, because a lot of my favorite industrial designers were initially architects. And I just think that's really important to remember, because it just shows you that design can come out of, design in one field can be born from another field. And I always think that's really interesting that somebody who was designing you know, a building. For instance, Arne Jacobsen is one of my favorite designers, and he looked to design, I believe it's a 707 hotel. He looked to design not only all the rooms and the space and the interaction, but he took it even further and said, I need to design the furniture in this space. I need to design, you know, how they interact with the furniture. And that's what really drew me to him as a designer. I think he thinks about every little detail. So I don't know.
Yeah. People probably listen to this. Most will probably be designers, but I think initially there's actually probably gonna be a lot of people who aren't in the design field. And so I think this will be a great way to educate people on like, what are these fields and how they're connected and like why we're so passionate about them and architecture.
Yeah.
But you're actually right now you're not, I don't want to say you're not practicing ID, but in like a, you're not practicing ID in a
traditional
sense, yeah, of what an industrial designer is doing and that, but you're more on like the craft side, you could say, but like working with like carpentry.
Yeah. So a large portion of industrial design in the kind of foundational period, what it meant to be so close to your product, came in the form of furniture design. And that's kind of what I was getting at with Arne Jacobsen and even like Frank Lloyd Wright. And I mean, the list goes on with architects that also dabbled in furniture design. So that kind of really drew me to the physical side of actually designing a product and seeing how you actually feel sitting in a chair. So I took my studies in that direction towards furniture design. And coming out of college, not just coming out of college, living in this century, there's not a lot of opportunities for innovative furniture design. It's mostly pioneered by individuals. Oh, what's his name? Jasper Morrison is a good example. He's pioneering the furniture field. He's leading. He's at the forefront of it. But he, or at least last I checked, he was. he is an individual, and of course he has associates that work with him, but it's harder to find companies that actually, you know, make leeway in this area. So if you want to be somebody who kind of takes a more traditional route for what an industrial designer in the furniture design realm would do is honing your skills. So I kind of took that to heart and just looked at different ways that I can hone my skills. So in Virginia, we have a large carpentry population and just background and history. So I took to, you know, learning carpentry skills. So yeah, I wouldn't say that I'm practicing per se as an industrial designer, but I would say that I'm making steps in the furniture design realm. But it definitely doesn't look like that at times.
Yeah. Yeah. Same with architecture.
Yeah.
probably too much. I mean, there's still something to be said about, this could be a whole nother conversation, about the act of making and working with your hands and craft and how important that is, that, I mean, forgotten in a lot of cases today, but still you're doing that. And I mean, even before this though, like you had studied in Denmark for a bit.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. I took I took a summer to travel to Denmark and study with what furniture designers would consider the birthplace of, you know, true intentional furniture design. So that was a huge part in my walk to, you know, landed where I am today, is just working with professionals that have, you know, they're so close to just the birthplace of everything that, you know, I'm interested in. So they have specific techniques that they like to use in not just the physical act of making furniture. You talked about craft and just attention to detail, but methodology too. They have a very clear just understanding of what what comes first, what comes next in the process, and what things are totally variable. When is it time to go back to the drawing board, and when is it appropriate to, you know, put all your hard work, the things that you've toiled over in the wood shop and on the drafting table, when is it time to put those on hold and just take it a step back and redesign some stuff and look a little bit further. So,
well, how would you say that, like, that experience, there's the obvious influence of carpentry and the interest, but more so like, how has that experience influenced what you're doing now? Cause I know, like, like you had said, it's not always making furniture. Like, you're doing cabinets, trim, and other things, but like, still, how does the learning what you learn there in the craft and the methodology and that play into things beyond then a chair or something, but like into the other stuff?
Yeah. So, there's been a couple, people that have been influential in my walk as a designer, but one was a professor in Denmark. The program that I was under was designing one piece of furniture, and it was, I can't remember how long it was, but, we were to design one piece of furniture, and I remember just battling with her, just over and over again about, millimeters over there. You know, we're designing completely in millimeters over there because that's a standard for them. And I remember just battling over 4, you know, millimeters on something. And she kept saying it doesn't matter. I don't know why you're so focused on this. You know, that really kind of like irked me a little bit. And I'm like, it's important because of, you know, it was a section on a chair that I was designing. It was an overlap, that would kind of accentuate and intrigue the eye. What I was actually trying to do is get people to flip the chair over and look at the construction of the chair underneath. And I told her that, I'm like, the 4 millimeters is so important because that 4 millimeters attracts the eye. And that's what gets you to do what I want you to do with my furniture. It's not sit in the furniture. That's the easy part. I want you to look at it and understand it. I want you to flip it over, and I want you to seek more. So, to answer your question, that professor, at the end of the whole program, she ended up giving me an award for the chair, which I was really grateful for and didn't feel adequate to accept. But they gave me this award, and she pulled me aside and said, that 4 millimeters is what got you this award. And that is kind of what I take to cabinetry. I think about not only what I'm trying to make, which is cabinets. So, you know, they're for storage, they're for prepping, the list goes on. But I'm thinking about who the person is and what I want them to do and what they would appreciate doing and seeing in their cabinets. What's their 4 millimeters in those cabinets? So that's really what I look for when I'm designing the cabinets. And honestly, building the cabinets, if I see an opportunity to give them those 4 millimeters that will intrigue them to look a little bit further and maybe spark the designer within them to think a little bit harder, I'll take that chance and do that metaphorical 4 millimeters.
Yeah. And are you still making, what are you doing on the side? I'll get to like the house later, but.
Oh, no.
What are you doing on the side? You know, because I know it's not always exactly like maybe what you want to be doing at work. I mean, just for like anyone.
Yeah. So there was I'm a workaholic first off. So I tend to just bury myself in whatever I'm doing at work because I kind of get obsessed with the details, which can be a good thing and a terrible thing at the same time. But free time is small. And when I do have free time, I obviously am looking at inspiration and, you know, having these designs go in my head. And not too long ago, I was designing a piece of furniture actually for a child, a children's chair. And I wanted it to be elegant that a parent would love to have it in their home and showcase it and not put it away like these, what is it? I don't know what brand it is, like little tykes or something, yeah, some kind of chair that's, it's just a injection molded or whatever, yellow plastic chair. And whenever people come over, they hide them away. And I was kind of looking at, okay, what does it look like to make a child's chair that's actually beautiful to look at? And people wouldn't mind sitting next to their Eames chair. What would that look like? So I was working on that for a while. I kind of hashed out most of the design, but I haven't gotten into physical, making of it. So.
Yeah, I think maybe most people feel that way now, pursuit or to have a side hustle. And I don't know if it's just that word or like that phrase has become popular. Honestly, you could just maybe insert like hobby into it as well.
Yeah. hobby for money.
Yeah, it's just like something you enjoy doing, and like people have always had hobbies and all that. But yeah, the side hustle is maybe more of like a business pursuit or something, maybe monetizable or anything. But I mean, for me, like I think it's super important to have these outlets, and they don't have to be designed. But I think for me and for other people, like your job that you're doing most of the time isn't like the complete ideal dream job, and even then you're probably going to be doing stuff that you may not want to do, and that's how it is. But to have these like the resources and access and like time to go and do something on the side you want to do, like if like you want to be making furniture because you love furniture, like you still can do that, and like you're going to put the time into it. And for me, it's like I want to be learning all these other skills. Like right now I'm doing this podcast on the side. I mean, it's a little bit different because I like a lot of extra time right now, but I just think it's important to still stay engaged, because the difference in from school and academia to the profession in most scenarios in architecture, ID, and other design disciplines is different. It's pretty wide. Yeah, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I agree completely. I mean, there's never a bad time to learn a new skill or challenge yourself, whether that's design wise or just, I don't know, in any form of life, really. I mean, even if take it to you can even go as far as like eating healthy. You know, it's eating healthy kind of stems from cooking, and it's never too late to challenge yourself to do a little bit. You know, be who you want to be and who you aspire to be and learn the skills that may help you later. And who knows, you might find out that you end up loving those skills and changing your career path because of it. So,
I mean, I think it's super important to continually, and I say continually loosely, not like every day, like pondering, like, what am I doing with my life? Or like, am I falling behind in anything, like whatever skill or whatever you want to be doing? But I think it's important to, every so often, whatever that is for you. I mean, certainly maybe every year, you know, analyze like, you know, what you're doing in your job. You know, what do you like? What do you don't like about it? How can you improve what you're doing, or how can you improve that situation like at the job itself? But also then what can you do like on the side or extra like career-wise or even just like mentally-wise, learn new skills or like just an outlet for stress or like anything. Like, I think it's important to do that. And it doesn't even have to be design. I'm not a workaholic in the sense that it's work that, but it, for me, it's complacency and like losing my design sensibility. And I always feel the need to have a million things that I need to be doing on the side if I'm not doing it at work. And that's like, 'cause I want to, but I feel this pressure. And I just felt like that was drilled in me from school, because I was doing so much at school, and like there's so much happening around you with, even within architecture, like people are using different mediums. They're doing all different stuff, not just buildings. And then you're surrounded by landscape architects, industrial designers, and like so much going on. And there's just like this work ethic that you become instilled with. And yeah. I don't want to lose it.
I think at
good or bad, I mean, yeah.
In school, I tried to do this thing because I relate completely to that kind of mindset of you want to do you want to perform well and you want to create well, but also there's this element of competition and an element of just pressure that's added a little bit to it. And of course you want to have outlets, but you also want to be growing and design, and it can be really overwhelming if you don't know how to navigate it. And in school, I would do these things. One of our professors encouraged us to do this. His name's Brooke Kennedy. And he encouraged us to every day just take a moment to design something very fast, all the way through. Just do something to get your mind off. And in getting your mind off, it kind of influences you as well. And I remember he had come by my desk one time, and I'd taken a book about maybe 2-3 inches thick, a big fat book. And I was playing with the spine and the pages. When I moved the spine, I found kind of a form that I liked, and I put a clamp on it and I put it on my desk, and I liked it so much. By the end of the day, I found myself spray painting the book white and my clamp and everything. And he came by at the end of the day and he's like, "What is this for?" And I said, "It's just for design. You know, it's just for me. I liked this and I went with it." And, you know, it didn't really lead anywhere, but it got us talking about design and how that exploration was really important. And I ended up using that curve that the book made to influence another design later down the road. So you never know where it's going to end up. And it wasn't my intent to use that for anything. I just liked doing it. I found joy. It was a rest. And it ended up, you know, benefiting a little bit.
You really do never know, like, when anything could happen, whether it's like that, or it could be, you know, it could be something, an accident, or it could be like, oh, like your pen dripped on a napkin and you're like, oh, like, what is that?
Wait a second.
Or like the classic, like something fell and then it's upside down and then you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You mentioned it earlier about your parents moving to Africa. And another thing that I've never met anyone else that has like had the up like you, living in a bunch of different countries around the world, really. And I don't know if you'd want to share about like those experiences living in those different places, what it was like, and then, you know, maybe how that influences, this could be a broad question, it could influence, obviously it influences your life, but like in what way, or maybe more specifically, how does it then like influence maybe your perspective on life and design and...
Yeah. For those who don't know me, I grew up in a couple different places, primarily in South America, in Venezuela, and then in the Middle East, in Qatar. And then, of course, back in the States. But because we were overseas, my family was able to travel all the time. So, I mean, every free weekend we took a trip, you name it. I mean, we'd go everywhere. A lot of times that was, you know, we spent our fair time in Europe, but also we spent our fair time just around in, you know, third world countries, Tanzania and Egypt and Oman, Yemen, UAE, you know, I mean, the list goes on. I personally, this might have to do with the age that I was when I was in these locations, but I personally identify a lot with the Middle East and the Middle Eastern culture. And like I said, it might be just because I was at that age where you're kind of defining who you are and who you want to be. But I like to think that there's a little bit more to that, that the people there have to deal with some challenges that people say in Europe and in the United States don't have to deal with, primarily economically. But you get to see, and especially as a child, you know, you're taking in the world, you're looking for anything, you're just observing. I remember taking in so much creativity from these people because they have to think on their feet. You know, if the guy who sells bananas down the corner, if his cart breaks, he's like, well, I got to fix it before the end of the day because I'm not going to be able to bring it back home. You know, so, you know, he finds some kind of makeshift way to make it work again, and then sends it down the road. So you get to see a lot of people using creativity to actually further whatever they're doing. And it's driven not out of, you know, desire or love of design or creativity or problem solving, but it's driven out of necessity. And I don't know if that played that huge a role into me wanting to be a problem solver, but I like to think it played a little bit of a role. But yeah, I think it just kind of shaped me as a person, just always looking to be a little bit innovative and just kind of considering all options as well as considering where people have come from. You know, if somebody's pushing around a ratty cart with three wheels, you know, I might not judge them immediately. I might think, hey, maybe they lost a wheel earlier, you know, and maybe they're getting along, you know. So,
I mean, now at this point, like, you're calling Southwest Virginia home, but I mean, I guess how long has that been now?
Shoot.
That's been like 8 years.
Eight or nine years. Yeah.
And that's, I mean, it was even then, maybe after school or slightly after school, that those like 5 years in Blacksburg was like maybe the longest you had been in one place your whole life. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's true. The house we lived in college was the longest house I've ever lived in.
Yeah, we lived there 4 years.
Yeah.
I mean, that just really goes to show like how much you were moving around. I mean, for your dad's job, but like how many different places you were and cultures you'd seen. But then even you had lived in Texas for a bit and your family's in Texas, but then to come to Southwest Virginia is very different. And even for me, like, you know, I'm from PA and there's just, you know, the people down there are just so nice. And it was like, it was a strange like culture shock. It wasn't like drastic, but it was, everyone was just way nicer. And like cars stop for you to cross the street. It's just, you know, sort of the, you could say like Southern hospitality. And, but now like that's like the place you call home, which I think is super cool. And I know like that's special to you. And now when I get to this, this is a big thing. Now you're a homeowner, which is pretty crazy to think. It's crazy that I just can't believe you own a home.
Yeah, me too.
Man, which is nuts. I'll have to get down there to see it. What's it like being a homeowner for people listening who don't own a home? Probably be a lot.
Yeah, it's terrifying. It's yeah, it's really terrifying. It's fun because you get to do whatever you want, you know, but for me and your experience as well, I mean, our college house and then I mean, we could do whatever we wanted in the college house. And then I lived in kind of a garbage apartment after that. And I could really do whatever I wanted within reason, but pretty much. And then I lived in a house that my church owned. And really, I just had to tell them I was doing something and they said it was fine. So that's never been any different. You know, it's cool having a new home because you can do whatever you want, but I've always kind of just done whatever I want. Yeah, anyways.
Like, we're going to do this. They'll find out later.
Yeah. But it is terrifying in the sense that whatever I do now is really my responsibility. You know, the first thing I did, and I told you this, the first thing I did literally the day that we bought the house, me and my wife bought the house, we came over here and we hit the walls with hammers. I mean, we tore down all these walls. We were ripping out studs and everything. It's just like, what if we did something completely wrong? You know, it's just a terrifying thought to know that, you know, if this thing comes down and it comes down in the middle of the living room or in the bathroom, it's like, oh yeah, that was me. I was the problem. So yeah, it's really fun, but it's a lot of work just mentally. You know, I keep hearing creaks and noises at night, and I'm not worried about intruders or anything. I mean, it's Southwest Virginia, but I'm just worried like something crazy's happened, like the sump pump isn't working and my basement is filling up with water, and that little noise was my washing machine cutting off or something. And it's just I lie awake at night all the time now.
I'm not there yet, so I can't even like really imagine, but I can imagine you doing that for sure.
Yes.
But that's super cool. Yeah. Cause like you and Katie, are both designers, and like you said, you were doing stuff beforehand, but one, yeah, there's that bigger responsibility, but now it's, you get to change things at a larger scale. It's not like in our the other places, like we're knocking down walls or like rearranging all this stuff or like putting in tile and all that. It's like smaller changes and whatnot, like paint, moving furniture, blah, blah. But like this is like your project and like you can really do, I mean, you could really do like whatever you want, which is super cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fun in the sense that you can, you know, when we looked at the house, we kind of saw what it could be rather than what it was. And that's, I mean, I guess that's a pretty average thing for people to look at houses to say, but obviously as designers, we're really looking at like, all right, what does this house want to be? You know, it's a, you don't know, you haven't been here, but it's a,
I've seen it's the a FaceTime.
Yeah. It's like a, I wouldn't call it a split level because usually split levels, you walk in and you have stairs up or down. You have to choose, immediately make a choice.
Yeah. I told my mom about this. She said it's called a tri-level. And I was like, I've never heard that before.
Yeah.
So no, she called it, no, you called it a tri-level. She called it something else.
That's what I was going to say. So
you told me tri-level. And then I told her and she was like, no, it's this. And I was like, I've never even heard that.
We started to hear that people were throwing around. Oh yeah. It's a tri-level. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, you know, I'm not an architect. I don't know these kinds of things. So I'm just like, okay, you tell me that's what it is. So, okay, I'll tell people that's what it is. But if you start to think about it, it's, you know, it's four levels. It's a two-level house, but offset. So there's stairs that zigzag all the way up, right? So really there's four levels, but one's a basement and it's kind of a half level. It's complicated. But what I was going to say is that, you know, we have this weird house that's split down the center. And when we walked in, I mean, they were hiding it. They were hiding that feature. So we took down these walls to kind of showcase like, this house is weird. Like, let's get it over with. Like, look at these stairs. Like it has a stage in the basement. Like,
oh yeah, that's right. Just,
it's a weird house.
There's a legit stage. Like a band could play in his basement.
Yeah. it's funky, but, I like it. It's a challenge, right? So,
yeah. Is it split up? I mean, I can't fully remember from the video, but is it kind of like, or will you set it up kind of like a ROM plan where sort of like there's different levels for the different programs in the space? So there's like a different level for each program within the house.
I don't know what you mean by program, but.
Like function, like. Sleeping, okay. Eating, living, yeah. You know, there's four levels. Like, is it broken up? That level is like defining that space and its function.
Yeah. So I definitely would say that. I don't know if I fully intended that at the beginning, but it really kind of naturally has gone to that kind of state. So there's, like I said, it's kind of four levels. And it's really the highest level is sleeping and there's a bathroom up there. It's kind of your everyday necessity kind of, you know, quarter, literally quarter of the house. And then there's a living, you know, section that's your living room and your kitchen. And that's all open now. And that's really all, that's where we spend our time. And then there's a third section that's, right now it's just boxes, but I intend it to be kind of the party space, that's where we'll have a big screen TV or a projector or something, or maybe a ping pong table or something to host, and kind of you change levels and you kind of change the feel of the gathering, I guess. And then the very basement is kind of where the nitty-gritty kind of stuff is. That's where the washer is, that's where the sump pump is, storage, Christmas supplies.
Matt loves Christmas.
Yes.
Oh, man.
So yeah, I think it is section to function, or I forget what the word you said was.
I had said program, but
yeah,
I mean,
no, I like it. I like it. It's different programs: the sleeping program, the living program.
Yeah,
the party program.
Yeah, I'm sure like Hillary or some architecture professors could have a long talk about the difference in between function and program, but yeah. we won't go there.
Yeah. I'm sure she's cringing if she's
yeah. As I'm just throwing them together like they're the same thing. people listening. Some people will get it. Some people won't.
Yeah.
yeah, I definitely need to get down there at some point. Maybe. Who knows? Maybe later this summer.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We got lots of space.
We'll have to get Chase. He's got a big truck. So if you need anything hauled or moved, we'll show up in the truck.
Yeah.
yeah, no, I want to see it. To me, I mean, I get it now, but it's so crazy to think like you and Patrick are homeowners. Patrick's one of our other roommates from college. You've been to Patrick's too. And like to see, I didn't see the before, but to see like what he's done and how it is because he's an industrial designer as well. I can be like, wow, this is like, he's done a really nice job. And I'm sure there's totally that sense of accomplishment. And he's always working on the house, like always doing something new to the house around the house. and I feel like that's always going to be you, Patch, like designers. Like we're always going to be like, there's always something I got to change or update or.
Yeah, actually, new. I was just saying right before we got on this call, we were just at me and my and Katie, my wife, was we were just talking about things that we can do to the house. You know, well, can we want these types of cabinets, you know, so I'm going to build them. But do we really need to change the floor? Because we like these cabinets, but they don't really complement the floor. So now we're talking about a whole nother project that we're adding to the mix. yeah.
I guess you just got to prioritize what's first and like
what or really or not need. Like we're doing you could not
don't prioritize and just like do it all and at the same time
live in the filth, you know.
I think this was a great conversation, honestly. I think this was a great start to had a lot of fun. Thanks again for coming on. This was really good.
Thanks a bunch for having me.
Yeah, I'm super pumped for where this is going to go, this podcast, and who we'll have on. We have a pretty good lineup of guests coming on the show in the coming weeks. Glad you could be episode one of.
Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome. It's kind of funny to see how it's all merging together, because it's just fun to see how you're tackling it, I guess. So.
Yeah, all of my guests so far are going to be close friends of mine that I met in school or like right after school, just like through life. But I think like being in the design community, like you meet so many people, you're at networking events or whatever, and then your circle of designers and like what people are doing grows. And, you know, I talked about this before with you. Like I wanted you, maybe it'll happen. Like, maybe this will become like a co-host virtual thing. Cause I talked to you before, literally like a year and a half ago, about starting a podcast and being a co-host and how I was hesitant if we were both remote and how that would work with like another guest. Cause I think there's a different dynamic when you're both in the same room. I think it's better when you're with the room someone, but I think especially is like co-host when you're also in the room together. I mean, but we know each other well enough that it could probably work, but it's cool for me now to finally be doing this. Like I just was like, oh, who could I have on? And immediately went to like my friends, because you're designers, obviously. But then I thought about like the people, a lot of people in my life are doing really interesting things, like just in their life and career so far, or like in their life have done interesting things or have like been places and whatnot. So that's why like I thought you would be the perfect person, because I'm like, won these awards, he's studied this, now he's doing this, now he owns a home, but he grew up here and like lives there, like all this stuff. So for me, like it's cool to see this small network of friends that I have who are just doing all these amazing things. I want to get it out there, like what people are doing, and it's not like no one's well known, like crushing it or anything, you know, it's just in their own small way or doing these great things, which I think is super cool and I think needs to be featured.
Yeah, I guess that I wanted to ask you a question too. Yeah, what is your intent for people on your show as far as, you know, occupation and kind of like, do you want, like, obviously you want some, you know, designers from all kinds of walks of design, but are you extending that to people who don't even know anything about design, but can speak educated, I don't know, just like can speak on it, even though they don't, you know, they don't know anything about it, like artists or just people who are really understand design, but weren't classically trained in it, or I don't know.
Oh yeah. Hopefully.
Hopefully they're out there.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully they exist. Yeah. I plan to have like, I want to have a variety of designers on the show. Right now, it's just like the people I know who are in design. I don't know as many people like not classically trained, I guess you could say. But I think like as, you know, this goes on and I'm starting to go through people, like I'll need to be reaching out to some people who aren't maybe in my immediate network or they're a friend of a friend or something. And hopefully then that can happen. But yeah, right now it's, like I said in the beginning, the podcast is really it's around the idea of practicing design daily and like the importance of doing at least one thing. And it could be even 5 minutes. It could be a quick 5 minute sketch. It could be, you know, you're crafting what meal you're going to make. You know, it really could be anything, but the importance in that, at least for me, is very high. And so I want to have people on the show that are also outside just architecture. You know, it's going to be architects, industrial designers, interior designers, sort of the classic ones that are in our circle. But, you know, I want to push into artists that are doing other things like, you know, graphic designers, web developers, UX, UI designers. You know, if there's artists, you know, in painting or jewelry or musicians out there, like really anyone who's doing something creative in the design realm, you know, I just want to have them on the show and like talk about what they're doing. And most of the people, honestly, will probably be younger, like several years out of college or something. And like they're hustling, they're doing, you know, they're in these design fields, and just talk about, you know, upbringing, their education, what they're doing design wise, and like, you know, what they're pursuing on the side as well, and their thoughts. Like I said, there's probably gonna be a lot of designers listening, probably a lot of non-designers listening, but I also think like it's a good way to just have these design conversations that people can learn more about architecture, ID, like whatever it is as well. So, I mean, even if it's just initially, there's people listening who aren't in the design fields, but they're learning something and they're like, wow, I never knew that about industrial design. Like, I didn't know what industrial design was. Like, just to like get the knowledge out there is also like what I want to do. And that's kind of what my ultimate goal with this podcast and then my YouTube channel is to really be centered around design, and we'll incorporate education in a way. It's not going to be like directly like a course, but I think just having these conversations, like it provides a way for people to learn about new fields and different things. I mean, because that's like how I've learned a lot of different stuff and like just have stayed engaged in my mind and like thinking just by like listening to discussions from people and learning that.
Nice.
Yeah. So I'm super pumped that this is finally, it's finally happened. Yeah. But thanks again.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Awesome, man. We'll stay in touch.
All righty.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone. It really means a lot. As I said in the intro, this was the very first episode of Design Daily recorded, and I had a ton of fun doing it, had a ton of fun catching up with Matt, and the conversation was fantastic. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, go leave a review in the Apple Podcast app, write a comment, let me know if there's people you want to have on the show or things that I can improve upon. I'm always looking to do that. And, you know, I just really want to have this be a show that's bringing value and stories to people out there from the design community.